And the time is 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. More information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon, USA, and online at kboo.fm. I'm your host, Andrew Geller, and today we are going to provide an update on a topic that we've periodically come back to over the years, and that is biotechnology and global trade rules. In specific, looking at the dispute between the United States, Canada, and Argentina, with Canada and Argentina sort of being secondary complainants, against the European Union regarding its ban on genetically modified organisms. And joining me to talk about the interim ruling released a few weeks back by the WTO, I have Adrian Bebb. He is a GMO campaigner with Friends of the Earth Europe, and thank you for taking time out of your evening to join us, Adrian.
Well, good morning. No problem.
Now, for people who haven't been following what's been going on with the GMO dispute between, and I'm just going to refer to it as the US-EU dispute because that's mostly what it is, can you give us about a one-minute summary that provides context for folks who don't have any idea what this dispute is about?
Yeah, sure. Genetically modified foods were first started 10 years ago mainly by an American company called Monsanto. They were grown in by American farmers and exported to the European Union. And the public had just come through a lot of food scares and were not happy about this. They were not asked whether or not they wanted their food modified in this manner. And there was a huge public outcry, and that still is going on in Europe, and there's virtually no genetically modified foods on the shop shelves at all. And obviously this has caused a problem for American farmers and a problem for Monsanto in particular, and the American administration. So 2.5 years ago, they decided enough was enough, and they decided to go to the World Trade Organization, and they lodged a complaint against Europe for being basically too slow and not approving enough genetically modified foods for sale and not allowing genetically modified crops to be grown in Europe. Now, this was not just a dispute about Europe. It was more mainly a dispute, you know, warning other countries, particularly in Africa and South America and so on, not to follow Europe's position and not to try and close the door to these biotechnology foods, but to you know, be worried about the WTO, the World Trade Organization. So it was they started this 2.5 years ago, this complaint, and the World Trade Organization has just in the past few weeks delivered its draft final ruling.
Right, and that came out on February 7th, and the United States Trade Representative's Office and the Agriculture Department wasted no time whatsoever in proclaiming the fairly insignificant pro-U.S. part of the ruling as a tremendous victory and a vindication of biotechnology, saying that in fact it is safe, the WTO says it's okay, and that countries should not think about pursuing any sort of ban or moratoria on GMOs. The European Union said, well, that's not actually what the WTO says, and the NGOs involved also largely seem to disagree with the U.S. opinion on the interim ruling. And the way the WTO works is the interim rulings go only to the parties involved, the governments involved in the case. Someone, I'm assuming in Europe, leaked a copy of the 1,000-plus page document to Friends of the Earth Europe sometime during February, and as of yesterday, February 28th, you folks posted the entire ruling on your website. So let's get into some of the detail about the issues that the WTO addressed and didn't address. And let's do the didn't address first, because that might even be more important. Two things the WTO did not talk about is whether genetically modified organisms are safe in foods, and whether or not the weird logic of the U.S. argument about substantial equivalence, which basically says they're the same as regular foods, but they're also not. How significant are those two items as something the WTO would not touch?
I think they're very significant because, you know, the last thing that America wanted for a start was to some big battle over whether or not GM foods were safe or not. And I think it would, if the WTO did get into those sort of arguments, then I think it would have caused pretty big, big, you know, a lot of public concern. This is a trade organization, and, you know, if they started delving into whether or not GM foods are safe or not, then that would have gone well beyond their remit. And I think they obviously decided that they were not going to touch this at all. And so they made it very clear in their report that they were not talking about the safety of genetically modified foods. Now, they did actually, in their report, they did say actually there's obviously, you know, there's quite a lot of risks. There are a lot of issues which are backed up by science, and there is a lot of concern out there. And they say, well, some of them they don't think will it happen that often, and other ones, well, it looks like they will happen more often. So, you know, they actually did go in a little bit into the safety, but I think, you know, what the most important thing to learn from here is that, you know, the American government came out shooting from the hip saying GM foods are safe, and they were targeting that message at, you know, developing countries, not just Americans or Europeans. And it's quite clear the WTO did not even look at that. So I think we can really ask questions about the U.S. administration about what they were, you know, obviously what the spin they were putting on to this story from the start. The other issue is substantial equivalence, which is a horrible term, but it's pretty key, really. And we've got a problem. We've got these new types of foods. Nobody really knows if they're going to be safe or not. It's very difficult to test a food, whether or not it's safe for human consumption, because we eat such a you know, a varied diet. How can you, if suddenly public became, you know, had more allergies, for instance, how could you pin that down to a genetically modified food? It'd be very difficult, because it could be, you know, maybe that you're eating too many burgers, or maybe there's some new pesticide on an apple or something. You know, it's going to be very, very difficult to judge that. So what they do, they actually say, okay, this this maize corn has been eaten for hundreds of years and it's safe, then we presume the genetically modified corn is also safe. And this is the whole basis on substantial equivalence. But if it wasn't the same, if it was not substantially equivalent, then the industry, the biotech industry, would have to do a lot more testing. And obviously, they don't want to do this. This costs money. This slows down the returns to their shareholders. So they're quite keen to show that GM foods do not need to be tested more than conventional foods. And this is, you know, one of the big issues which we thought might come out of the WTO verdict. And again, the WTO saw this as a really big controversial issue and stayed well clear of it.
Now, the European Union has the world's strongest regulatory framework regarding genetically modified foods, and it covers many specific different parts of how a food would get to market. There's requirements regarding clear identification and labeling, traceability and monitoring, and this WTO ruling doesn't affect any of that stuff. And in fact, it wasn't even what the U.S. was challenging so much as how they were implementing those rules. There were bans in specific countries that the WTO said failed to meet obligations under an agreement that's called the Sanitary and Phytosanitary Agreement. And those seem to be, those have gotten mixed up in press reports that I've taken a look at. Can you explain the significant ruling against Europe in this WTO case?
Yeah, well, to start off with, because the way the World Trade Organization works, everything is secret, and just parts of it were leaked to the media very quickly, which basically said Europe had lost and has to overturn its national bans. And they lost on the moratorium. It was deemed as a barrier to trade. But what we're seeing now, when we actually look at the whole report, that this is actually not quite the case. The WTO actually makes it quite clear that countries can ban genetically modified foods. They've got to follow a particular process. And Friends of the Earth is not particularly happy about that process. But at least, you know, there is a process, and you can ban genetically modified foods if you want. And they just basically, they concluded that Europe or the countries that have banned genetically modified foods hadn't followed the right process. So they hadn't actually filled out the proper risk assessment and so on that you have to do under WTO rules. So they're not saying that the bans are illegal, which is what the American government is saying, but they're actually just saying that the way they've been done has not been done according to WTO rules. So I think, again, it looked initially as if Europe had lost on the bans, and this is why America, when the U.S. government went around the world saying, you can't ban genetically modified foods anymore. But when you look at the detail, and that's not exactly what the WTO is saying.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting to read different assessments of that, because the WTO seems to offer hints on how to correctly do it. I mean, as you note, they're not saying you can't do it. It's just you didn't do it properly, and here's what was missing.
Yeah, and exactly the same with the moratorium. Europe had a moratorium for nearly 6 years. We did not approve any new genetically modified foods for nearly 6 years, and that's kind of ended now because of the pressure of the WTO. But the WTO report makes it very clear, saying, well, yeah, in this particular case, we think the moratorium did cause delays, but we're not against moratorium, and it actually says how to do a moratorium, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the complete opposite to what the U.S. administration and companies like Monsanto wanted. They wanted a ruling which said moratorium on genetically modified foods or crops are illegal. And this came out the complete opposite, and actually said, well, actually, under certain circumstances, it's quite acceptable to have a moratorium. So I think this is where I can imagine people in the boardrooms of Monsanto and in the White House are not happy about this result.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. My guest today is Adrian Bebb. He is a GMO campaigner with Friends of the Earth Europe. And you can find out more about them online at www.foeeurope.org. And that's one word, no hyphen, foeeurope.org. And the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links to them, as well as a whole bunch of other information related to our topic today, which is the interim ruling issued 3 weeks ago by the World Trade Organization regarding the U.S.-EU GMO dispute. And we've been discussing what the WTO didn't address and a couple of the main findings against Europe. But now let's look at what really makes up the bulk of the report, which are the charges that the WTO refused to rule on. There's too many to really get into in the remaining time, so why don't you touch on a couple of the key allegations made by the U.S. that the WTO said just the case wasn't made?
Well, I think the main one was the one I just talked about the ruling that they really wanted to say that moratorium was illegal, and the WTO just ignored that basically and said, well, it did cause delays, but it wasn't illegal per se, and they didn't even recommend any action to be taken against the EU on that. So I think, to me, that was the main thing which was a problem for the US government. I think the other issues are some of them very technical and some just WTO ones, but, you know, they try to basically say that the whole policy of Europe was actually, you know, disguised trade restriction, that we were, you know, just targeting US products and so on. And this was just all thrown out, and it was quite clear, and the majority of the US and the Canadians and the Argentines' arguments were thrown out in the end. So, you know, I think they tried to say, you know, that the EU was favoring their own biotech industry or their own products and discriminating against the imports from the US. They also, quite interesting, they threw out an argument from Argentina. Argentina was pushing that the EU had broken a WTO rule, which basically says that they've got to take into consideration the special needs of developing countries. Now, that was, I think, another key one which the US wanted Argentina to win, because they were quite keen to actually push home and say that the moratorium or the bans in Europe was actually having an effect on developing countries. It was causing world hunger and was not helping the cause at all. And the WTO threw that out, and I think that's a very, very key one to throw out. And the WTO ruled, well, there was no evidence that Europe has discriminated against developing countries at all here. And for Friends of the Earth, that was a welcome decision to throw that one out, because even at the beginning of the dispute, 2.5 years ago, President Bush was up there doing speeches, and, you know, he was accusing Europe of causing world hunger, which is an outrageous thing to say. Mm-hmm. And it's got nothing to do with genetically modified foods, which are actually causing some of the hunger. They're starting to cause poverty in countries like Argentina itself, and the WTO has actually ruled against them on this, which I think is quite significant.
And Friends of the Earth released a report last year chronicling the first 10 years of genetically modified foods, and finds that many of the points you just referenced are very well documented, and people can find that report at the Friends of the Earth Europe website. Now, this WTO dispute is the first time that genetically modified organisms have been addressed by a WTO panel, and the U.S. came out of this really wanting to impress upon, you know, it's not so much, as you pointed out, it's not really quite so much that Europe was the point, but it was trying to be used as an example by the U.S. to point out to India, China, other economies in Asia and Africa, and as you mentioned, South America, where there's tremendous populations, and that's really what's viewed as the potential market for U.S. biotech firms, not really so much Europe. What have you seen in terms of response from either NGOs or media in those regions regarding this WTO ruling? How are they viewing this?
Well, I think this is where it gets incredibly worrying, because the spin put on by the American government is that we are hearing directly from African governments, for instance, that they are worried about bringing in laws against GMOs and genetically modified foods. So I think, you know, you can see that the effect is already happening, that these countries now who cannot even think about going, you know, facing the U.S. in the WTO trade dispute. They just don't have the finances or the resources or the legal capacity to take on the U.S. in those courts. Then, you know, you're seeing them already, you know, starting to think twice. And I think this is why, you know, it's outrageous of what the U.S., you know, said, but, you know, quite clever of them. And I think it's already having an effect. I think it was to Friends of the Earth, you know, we're very angry as well that it was even taken to the World Trade Organization, because this is a trade body. This is at the end of the day, this is the body which doesn't particularly look at environmental or social causes. It actually trumps trade above all of those. It's, you know, it's got a big business agenda, and, you know, there are other international fora which we think is more appropriate for dealing with trade cases like this. And the most obvious one is called the Biosafety Protocol, which is part of the United Nations. And, you know, no surprises to anybody that the U.S. has not signed up to that protocol. But, you know, that is the protocol which deals in the trade of GMOs and genetically modified crops. And that's the obvious place where disputes like this should be, you know, should be dealt with. And I think that will see a more even playing field, if you like, where environmental side and social sides of the argument are taken into consideration. Because although the WTO ruling in the end was, you know, if you look at the fine print, wasn't that bad, at the end of the day, it's, you know, still running a trade agenda, and, you know, saying it, you know, Europe can ban it, or you can have moratoriums. You know, there's very, very clear rules there, which are, you know, on the trade agenda and not necessarily on a human-friendly or environment-friendly agenda. So I think there's serious question marks about the role of the WTO itself in this. And I think they recognize that, and that's why they stayed clear of some of the most controversial issues which we talked about earlier on.
Now, I forget if it was in something from the WTO or a media report that I read, that the relevant aspects of the biosafety protocol were not referenced in consideration of this dispute before the WTO, because the complainants are not signatories to the UN treaty. And they therefore said, even though there's 130-something countries in the world, these three aren't, and therefore we shouldn't have to think about what the UN treaty says, even though it's really a global issue.
Yeah, that's a pretty disgraceful position by the WTO. Now, Europe has signed up to this United Nations legislation, so has 130 other countries, and that's the legislation we're following. And just because those three countries who happen to be, you know, big producers of GM crops are not signatories to the protocol and have not ratified it, and translated it into their own national laws, then the WTO discards that whole protocol, which, you know, shows again the limitations of the WTO. And, you know, perhaps you could have seen, well, maybe they were actually running away from that argument as well. They didn't want to see it as a clash with the biosafety protocol, because, you know, biosafety protocol is meeting in just 2 weeks' time in Brazil and for the next stage of the negotiations. And obviously, it's a pretty a sensitive time at the moment, so maybe the WTO even steered away from that argument, knowing full well that this could really blow up in their face.
Now, we've just got about 5 minutes left here. I want to touch upon public sentiment in Europe regarding this, and again, I just want to point out, this is a draft ruling. The final ruling is expected in a couple months' time or so. There's a decent chance that there will be an appeal, which would drag it out about another year, year and a half or so. So what we're talking about today can change, but probably not a whole lot. Just recently, Hungary declared itself to be genetically modified organism free and will remain that way. Greece and Austria have reaffirmed their total opposition to these crops, joining many other countries. Public sentiment in Europe is very anti-GMO, and I'm just curious if you guys think that this is actually going to have an impact in terms of what people can purchase food-wise in Europe.
I don't think it's going to make any impact. I don't think American farmers are going to be able to sell any more genetically modified corn than they can now, which is virtually zero to the human food in Europe in the food chain. I think, you know, the public opposition is pretty strong. 70-80% of the public are against eating genetically modified foods. And as you said, you know, some of the countries which some of those who have been accused of having the bans in the actual WTO dispute have reaffirmed their bans. Other countries, such as Poland and Hungary, for instance, have also brought in bans since the start of the WTO complaint. And also because we're approaching a debate in Europe about whether or not we should grow GM crops on a large scale. And what we're seeing is a lot of the regions, which are kind of equivalent to the United States, I guess, a lot of our big regions have actually said, we don't want to have GM crops in our region. We want to market our agriculture as quality foods. We don't see genetically modified foods as being quality foods. And this would damage our local economy if we start growing them. So we've got something like 170 regions at the moment saying, we do not want GM foods or crops in our regions. That's a pretty big movement growing. This is, you know, this is not done by activists. This is done by local elected representatives and politicians. And I think, you know, the opposition is very strong. I don't think this WTO case is going to affect it one bit. It might even go the other way. It might make people more angry. But I think my main concern is what happens in Africa, what happens in Asia, what happens in South America. And are we going to see there that the governments there are just too scared to bring in legislation which will really address the risks of genetic modified crops and food. And that's the big concern.
Now, just in closing, you folks have recently launched a new campaign, the Bite Back campaign. And I'm curious if you would just briefly explain what that is, what you're hoping to do, and if there's a way that folks here in the U.S. can participate and have an impact in it.
Yeah, the Bite Back campaign was basically, because the whole WTO is so secret, there is no way for the public to get involved in this dispute, and this is one of our big criticisms. We decided to force our way in. So we urged the public to, through the Bite Back campaign, to actually write their own objection to this case, and we send it straight to the WTO and say, hands off our food. This is not a decision that has to be made by the WTO. There's other places for it. And, you know, you've got to respect the right of people who want to make a choice, who want to say they don't want to eat genetically modified foods. So this is a campaign which was started when the dispute started 2 years ago. And it's a pretty big coalition now, something like 600 organizations, combined membership of something like 60 million people now. So we're talking about a big coalition. And we are urging people to still take part in that too. And we've got a cyber action which has just been started on there, which is urging people to send emails to the European governments at the moment to stand firm and to not give in to this pressure from the WTO or the US government or Monsanto. So it's very much live at the moment, and it's a very interesting network which covers development groups from the third world countries to environmental NGOs, to even trade unions as well. And, you know, this kind of shows the strength of opposition to both the WTO and also genetic modified foods.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your evening to join us here on the program, Adrian, to talk about this ruling.
That's been a pleasure.
Adrian Bebb is a GMO campaigner with Friends of the Earth Europe, and we've been discussing the recent WTO interim ruling on the US-EU GMO dispute. And you can, I guess he is cut out earlier there. You can find out more online from Friends of the Earth Europe at foeeurope.org. They have lots of resources, the entire WTO interim ruling posted there, some analysis, lots of links. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm also has many, many links to information connected to this topic. Thank you very much for listening to the program. If you have comments or questions, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. I will be preempted next week for International Women's Day, and we will hear a little bit more about that in the tail end of next half hour. And coming up next, Carlos Chavez hosts an update on the current situation regarding the rights of immigrants in the United States.